This is
Fight Disciples.
Welcome to podcast number 530. We are the Fight Disciples. This is dedicated to the world of mixed martial arts, mainly UFC. There's a bit of Bellator to talk about from the weekend, which we'll get stuck into. If you want to subscribe to us, please do via iTunes. And if you're going on iTunes, please write us a five-star review. It just helps with our visibility in the iTunes charts. You can get Android feeds if you need one of them via our website, fightdisciples.com. We're all over YouTube as well. Go and get stuck into that. There's plenty of interviews coming your way from your favourite mixed martial artists. At the weekend, Nicholas, it was nice to be back with a bit of UFC action, a bit of Bellator action as well to get stuck into, given the fact that we had a week off after the Brits Abroad the week previous. And of course, this weekend, we get stuck into a bit of UFC 266, which sees the return of a legend. That's a bit of a shame, that, actually, that my first focus is Nick Diaz, when there's two brilliant world title fights on the card as well. But I'm actually talking about a guy that's not fought for 6 years, and this is a rematch 17 years in the making. But I suppose that's caught everybody's imagination, hasn't it?
The weird thing is, I think most fans, or most hardcore fans, should I say, are looking forward to seeing Nick Diaz make his ring walk, then two genuine world title fights. It is bonkers, but this is MMA, and it is as much about the show business as it is about the fights inside the octagon. And even though he hasn't won a fight, you know, since I was in short pants, since I was in school, Nick Diaz remains one of the biggest draws in the sport, because he is an icon. He's a cultural icon, isn't he? He's a pop hero, whatever you want to describe him. He's Nick Diaz, man. He's the original leader of the Scrap Pack. It is what it is. Can't wait.
I'd just like to point something out for our listeners, right? Of which only came to my attention 5 minutes ago. So the way we set this up on a Monday morning, sit down here at 9:30. We both go and do the school run, drop the kids off at the school, and then at 9:30 we sit down and we do back to back podcasts. We always do the boxing one first, and then we follow it up with the mixed martial arts one. And that's what you're listening to right at this moment in time. So the boxing one's done. It's in the can, ready to go, ready to be uploaded and into your ears. Okay, so we're in there talking about Anthony Joshua and Alexander Usyk, and we're giving it the big in and we're getting all excited. But I did notice that my colleague, who is normally very well outspoken, quite loud actually on the show, and does a lot of swearing, I noticed that he toned it down a little bit for this week. And I thought, is he all right? Maybe he's had a drink yesterday. Maybe he's a little bit hungover. Maybe he's a little bit... worse for wear. No. In between the recordings, ladies and gentlemen, I noticed that there was another person in the room with him at the time of recording. That's right. Mrs. Pete is doing some work from home today, and that's why he's on his best behaviour. Isn't that right? That's why there's no swearing. That's why you've actually just toned down the decibel levels as well, haven't you, mate? Eh? Are you on your best behaviour, pal?
I've got to watch my P's and Q's because the wife's in earshot, exactly. So, listen, I built this beautiful studio and I don't get to use it for Fight Disciples because the wife works from home most of the time. So we share this office, so I can't use this room. That's more than anything, not so much because of my foul mouth and I don't want her to look down on me, which she does a lot, but more because she had the cheapest, most clacky keyboard in the history of cheap PC keyboards. So I couldn't sit here doing a show because you'd have been constantly going to me, what's that noise in the background? Are you tapping? Stop tapping. What are you tapping for? Because she'll be tapping away. But I cracked it at the week last week. I ordered her a soft touch keyboard and I said, right, that's it now. I can get in the studio. I can do Fight Disciples on a Monday. You can sit alongside me or within touching distance.
No.
And but obviously the payoff to that is I'm on my best behaviour. No talking about anything naughty.
Listen,
you know.
For 5 years, right?
I've got my posh TV voice on. You may have noticed.
That's not this is not what the people are tuning in for. You know this, my man. They're tuning in for an old, unfiltered Nick Pete. That's all they're here
is
for.
That what they want?
Yeah. All I do is drive the bus, pal. I drive the bus. They want the rowdy kid at the back of the bus to be kicking off every 2 minutes. That's what they want. Don't be coming here saying that you've just been made a prefect. Don't be doing that.
I need to get her some headphones and put some music on so she can't hear what's... me full throttle.
Mate, get her in the house. That's your office, that. I know that she can't hear me because you've got your headphones in.
No, I'm just going to say you're naughty.
Right, I'll have to go for OTT then. I'll have to be the renegade on the show. Here's a little stat for you. Starting this weekend, September the 25th, obviously, which is UFC 266. And this stat runs all the way through to November the 6th, where you're going to get UFC 268. That's a period of 42 days, ladies and gentlemen. 42-day period. We're going to get six undisputed world title fights. Four of those champions are fighting the number one ranked contender in their division. This is what fight sports is supposed to look like. This is what it's supposed to look like. One of the other champions is fighting the number two ranked title contender. Do you know why? Because he's already beaten the number one guy on two separate occasions. And the final champion out of those six is fighting the number three contender. Do you know why she's fighting the number three contender? Because she's already smoked number one and number two. There's nobody else available for her. Unbelievable. That's what fight sports is supposed to look like. The UFC is setting precedent, and people will come at me saying, well, it's easier to be able to do because it's one single, one song. Yes, that's the fucking point. One single, one song. Let's have one single, one song across all the fight sports, and therefore we can all get hard-ons week in, week out. Yes, I did say hard-on in the presence of Nick's wife. Yes, I did say it, all right? We can all get an hard-on getting excited about fights in the upcoming months. Listen, this weekend, we have got two title fights. We'll start with two title fights rather than Nick Diaz. We'll finish on the Nick Diaz thing later on in the show. But first of all, let's review the weekend's action, shall we? Where do you want to go? Do you want to go Bellator first? Do you want to go Yoel Romero doing Yoel Romero bits? What do you want to do?
Yeah, man, let's start with Bellator. And I'm going to start with actually one, a lad from up your neck of the woods, Sol Rogers from Manchester.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, man, Sol getting a good win.
Sorry, mate. I can't get used to you not talking loudly. This is weird. This is so weird.
You've been moaning for years saying that I keep screaming down the microphone.
You've been moaning for years that I've been screaming down the microphone. What the fuck is going on here? Gee. Listen, this is the one thing I look forward to every single week, mate, right? I live in a house with kids and my wife who just fucking frown at me all the time. Me one get together with me mate every single week and his wife's turned up. I feel like a fucking gooseberry. What's going on? Third wheel casseroles here. Oh, right, yeah, right, yeah.
I prefer Sol down at lightweights rather than featherweights. I think he was cutting too much weight to do featherweights. Now, man, it was good to see Sol Rogers back. Good to see him with a win. Dominant.
Say a swear word. Say a swear word.
Dangerous
opponent. Do a swear word. Do a swear word.
He was flipping outstanding.
Oh, man. Jeez. Listen, she knows you're a see you next Tuesday. Just be that guy. Yeah, you're right about Saul, mate. Mate, he brought war, man. He brought war. Yes. I thought his was probably the most entertaining fight of the night, if I'm honest.
I'll tell you what I did learn, that he's moved over to Sanford MMA. I didn't realise he left Manchester, he'd moved over to Florida, but I think he'd said afterwards that at some point in time, as good as it was in Manchester, you know, where he's been based most of his career, he's had to make that move. Now, obviously, people may not remember Saul had a brief moment with the UFC, dominated his season of the Ultimate Fighter. He got into the final and unfortunately completely and utterly, never mind burned his bridges, he poured fire all over it and set fire to it from a great height with the UFC, because he was supposed to be in the tough final, and then they said, right, okay, we need to get your license now because it's no longer an exhibition, you are actually competing in a UFC event, so it's a different type of visa. You need to have a visa to work in America. The Ultimate Fighter is not work, it's exhibitions. So anyway, you need to have a different visa. And then he turned around to the UFC and said, well, obviously, I've got a criminal record. And they said, well, wait a minute, whoa, whoa, whoa. You didn't tell us about this. You didn't tell us you had a criminal record. So we couldn't actually get a work visa to perform in the Ultimate Fighter finale, which completely and utterly but...
I'm so sorry, you're recording.
Of course I'm recording.
What do you think we're this doing?
See, look at her walking past the background and everything. She'll do anything to get on the telly. Look.
Hey, look at
it. You're going to have to cut that out.
No, you're going on YouTube, mate. You're going
so
on.
It's so loud. It's hurting my ears. It's
in
headphones.
See what I've got to put up with?
I'm not editing it. I'm not editing that out. She's staying in.
Oh, cut that
She's staying
out.
In. She's staying. Shh. Anyway,
wait,
so.
Wait. Don't leave me in there, please.
No, you're staying in.
So, Sol Rogers... he was supposed to be in the tough final. Anyway, he couldn't get a working visa then because of his criminal past, his criminal record. Because he never announced that to the UFC. They basically went, right, fuck you. We've done a whole show now where we're promoting you as the number one favourite for our tough final, but we're going to have to replace you publicly and go, Sol's out. This guy's in instead because of X, Y, Z. And because of that reason, Sol Rogers will never, ever fight in the UFC, which is such a shame. But he has been on a mad journey. He's been as low as featherweight. He's back at lightweight now. Mm. Kid can fight, man. Kid can fight. And he's been through some crazy stuff in his journey to get to this point. It was just nice to see him get his arm raised. And as I say, impressive to hear that he's got over to Sanford MMA to work with Henry Hooft and that, because, listen, man, as good as it training may have been, iron sharpens iron. And obviously at this stage in his career, Sol has found a new lease of life over in Florida.
Yeah, I thought his was the best fight by a mile, mate. Great performance from him. One thing that I was like, nah, did that actually really happen? Watching Neiman Gracie win by knocking some dude out. I was like, huh? What's happened? What's happened there? You just take people's necks and choke them out, man. I think that's the first ever time that he's done it. I think it's the first ever TKO that he's got in his professional fights, man. Neiman Gracie, finishing someone with hands, things that I thought I'd never see. Fair play, Win.
Fair play. And then obviously the main event was just Yoel Romero being Yoel Romero. And,
well, mate, I thought that they just basically picked up Yoel Romero from the Israel Adesanya fight, picked him up and just stuck him back in the... It's like, do you know, have you seen them people doing them TikTok glitches things to the Missy Elliott song? Missy now, all that type of... The little glitch thing. It felt like that's all Yoel Romero was doing. He was just like, are you going to do something, Yoel? Are you going to get stuck in? I don't, for the life of me, understand how one judge scored him for the win. But, mate, it is what it is. Phil Davis.
I've seen afterwards Scott Coker come out and said, we're going to review our three rounds for the main events. We need to have five. I was like, no, we don't. I didn't need to see five rounds of that. Thanks.
Well, the reason for that is because Yoel Romero came out. He said, I didn't realise, with it being a main event, I didn't realise it was a three-round fight. Hey, surely that's in the fucking contract that you signed, Yoel. You know the score, mate.
There's a warning for everyone out there. Steroids make you deaf. Steroids make you deaf. And proof if you ever needed it, that performance-enhancing drugs don't always enhance your performance. There's a nice reminder.
Yeah. Phil Davis looked all right, though. Even though Yoel Romero didn't really offer much resistance, Phil Davis looked all right. Did what Phil Davis does, doesn't he? Elite wrestler. Yeah. Did elite wrestling.
Davis. Always liked him. He's always been a cracking interview and a top guy. But, yeah, whatever. Let's get to the real stuff, shall we?
The real stuff. You're so patronising. Anthony Smith, man. Don't fuck about with Anthony Smith. He's still an OG. Yes, okay, he's fallen short on a couple of occasions, but if you're going to talk some smack, you better be able to bloody back it up, all right? When this fight was made, I'm going to be dead honest, when this fight was made, I actually thought, I feel for Ryan Spann, because Ryan Spann's big, right? And yes. I know that he's beaten some dudes, but there's never been that moment where I've watched Ryan Spann go in, he's a contender. He's in the conversation with the Rakitic's and the Prajashkas and all those types of guys. I've never felt like that. And when this fight was made, I thought, I think he's a bit out of his depth. If he beats Anthony Smith, then maybe my attitude will change. Fucking hell, man. I saw the weigh-in. He won't look at Anthony Smith in the eyes. I thought, this ain't right. And then at the start of the fight, he did the same thing. I thought, he ain't here, man. He ain't here. Anthony Smith's going to eat this dude. And he ate him, what, within 3 minutes? Gone. That's out of there, sunshine.
For someone who talked so much shit, I read a lot of the stuff that he was saying, but I was like, his body language at the weigh-ins, I was like, what? Where have you gone? You've gone back into your shell, haven't you, lad? You were giving it the Billy Big talk the other weekend. But I'm like, listen, I think Ryan Spann has got talent, he's got potential, but this is the third time now that I've seen him in what you would say is a big fight. You know, because everyone, when he was on the Dana White's Contender Series, everyone was going, this Ryan Spann's the guy, waiting to see this guy, he's a monster. Mm. And I didn't only watch the final because everyone was going, oh, you can't miss this. So watches the final. Carl Robertson knocks him out, like literally in about 10 seconds.
Yeah.
And I was like, did someone get the names mixed up? I thought Ryan Spann was the guy. Anyway, he then goes on, left UFC, put in the UFC. I think he went to Legacy, come back to the UFC. He's on this unbeaten run now of about eight fights, beat Sam Alvey. Come on. come on, mate. Sam Alvey, anyway. But then they put him in with Johnny Walker. And I'm like, right, okay, I remember Ryan Spann. I tuned in for this guy. This is the guy. Johnny Walker smashes him to bits in one round. And I'm like, oh, okay. Maybe he's not that guy. Then he goes and beats Misha Serkinov. Decent win. But let's be honest, not a top 10 win, but a decent win. And they hand him Anthony Smith. And I was like, you, man. I was like, with all the big talk, I'm like, wow, maybe Ryan Spann's found it now. Maybe it's twigged. Maybe he's changed coaches. Maybe that potential that we've all been high on, or people have been high on from certain quarters, is going to realise itself. And Anthony Smith is just the wounded animal enough to realise that potential. And then from the weigh-ins to the minute the fight got stopped, I'm like, man against boy. Completely out of his depth. Nowhere near the top 10. Anthony Smith absolutely battered him.
Which then means, what next for Anthony Smith? Now, I know post-fight, Bisping's there, sticks the microphone in his face. He says Rakic has been on social media and he says that he fancies it and he goes, Merry Christmas and all that type of stuff. But for me, I think I've seen that fight. We've seen it, haven't we? Do we have to see a rematch? Do we want a second one? Maybe. Listen, I'm not against it because in the light heavyweight division, I think there's a lot of sharks there and they all make some great matchups. Let's do Ankalaev. Fuck it, man. Yes. Let's throw him right in at the deep end. You think you got it? Go on, son. Go and fight that monster.
I think that's a brilliant fight. I think Ankalaev would be a wonderful next fight for Anthony Smith. I think they're alongside each other in the rankings anyway. Why not, man? Why not indeed? Good call.
There's a lot of... I'm going to get the rankings up here, man, because you've got... I think Ankalaev is actually paired against Uzumiye, isn't he? So even if Uzumiye wins that, I don't think Uzumiye will win that fight. But Ankalaev, Uzumiye winner. You've got Dominic Reyes as well, who's obviously been at the top level there. And Rakic, part two, would probably be the fights that I would point towards for Smith. But Ankalaev, man, that's the one.
Listen, I like Anthony Smith, and I'd take Anthony Smith versus Paul Craig all day, every day as well. Please, UFC London, sign me up.
Are you a fan of the new bald, bearded Jon Kutalaba?
I'll be honest, I much preferred the Hulk Hogan. The Incredible Hulk version.
Yeah.
Hulk Hogan.
That'd be even better if you had like a bald head with a little mullet out the back and a sash. That'd be even better.
Handlebar moustache.
Yeah.
I am a real American.
Ripping a vest as he comes off. In. Yeah, absolutely, yeah, man.
That there's an opportunity for him there. But listen, he dominates the fight. He wins every round against Devon Clark. Did I expect him to do that? Yeah, probably did, to be honest with you. I think Kutalaba's got a lot of potential. But, I think Anthony Smith, again, in the main event, just proved that there's levels to this weight division. And, he had those two fights with Ankalaev, didn't he? The first one, of course, that was weird, premature, and then the second one kind of rubber stamped it.
Yeah.
But I think he's got a lot of ability. But I knew he was going to win this fight. So
He's fun, man.
Yeah, he is fun, yeah. He is a fun light heavyweight. Yeah.
Listen, the star of the show by an absolute mile for me was Armin Tsarukyan, right? Now,
brilliant.
The reason why I'm classing him as the star of the show, even though Anthony Smith puts manners on Ryan Spann, it's because I've been waiting for this. What I saw at the weekend, I've been waiting for this. I've watched this guy fight and he is just shut out. I think it's four opponents previously in the UFC. Absolutely won every single minute of every single fight. Doesn't matter where the fight goes, dominates. And I've been like, cool, this is great. You're obviously very, very good. And there's not a lot of people that can live with you. You could quite comfortably roll with top 10, top 5 guys. But to capture the imagination of the fan, you've got to put people out, man. You've got to finish people. If you're choking them or you're smashing them on the chin or whatever, you've got to put people over. And that's been the criticism. And I think a lot of people have been the exact same thing with Armin. They've thought the same thing. This was different level, man. Absolutely different level. He was in a bit of trouble early. I say trouble. Got taken down, didn't he? Bounced back up to his feet and what have you. And he showed, obviously, the defensive elements of his game are still on point. But then finishing dudes with hands, because he's a wrestler, he's a grappler, he's a guy that gets close and smothers you and Habibs you, I suppose is the best way of describing him. But for him to plant his feet and go get to fuck, it's like, oh, hello. where have you just come from? Real deal, mate. Serious contender. I'd catapult him, I'd throw him straight in there and give him a fight in the top 10. I think he's that good.
Yeah, I, obviously on last week's show, this was the fight I picked out. I said this was the fight to look out for. It's Giagos, because Giagos is no joke as well. His only losses in the UFC have come against Jacar Closer, and obviously the champion, Charles Oliveira. Kid can fight. But what we had here was two guys that were super confident that just came flying out the gate at one another. And it was clear that Sarukian just had that edge, you know. His hands did look impressive. Class. His only loss in the UFC has come against Islam Makhachev, who is obviously Habib's protege. That's likely going to take over the weight division one day. And that was a fight of the night as well. He lost it, but it was a fight of the night, which lends itself to the fact that he did perform admirably in that fight as well. So I'm like you, man. I think he's 100% going to be a future title contender. Don't be surprised if he fights Makhachev part two in a couple of years' time for the belt. The only thing with Sarukian and Arman, it'd be easy to push him in the top 10 now. Yes, I could see that argument, but he's 24 years of age. I don't think we need to push him into the top 10 yet. I think he's got, a nice co-main event somewhere would probably work out nicely as well. Maybe against, you know, someone that's been around the block a little bit rather than someone that's in the top 10, top 15, maybe a fallen idol, if you like. I think that would really do well for us,
profile,
to build his brand and profile. And we'll take it slow from there. I don't think there's any rush with him, but you're right, man. He was outstanding. And as soon as he got Giagos hit, jumped on his back and just started raining in punches.
Fucking hell, it was brutal.
Mate, how many did he throw? Must have threw about 20 left. 20 lefts, and then when he rolled over the back and threw 20 rights before the referee jumped in, I was thinking, Christ, Giagos must owe this referee money. Jesus.
Before we get stuck into 266, if you haven't seen Nate Manez's comeback, go and watch it. It's absolutely fucking ridiculous. He's taking on Tony Gravely, right? This fight is madness because, mate, he gets knocked out at the end of the first round. It reminded me a bit of Bisping Silva. He gets knocked out right on the hooter. He's on his bum and out. And you would think if there's another, even just 5 seconds, the ground and pound finishes the fight. He's allowed to stand up and go and sit in his corner. And then he comes out for the second round and puts absolute manners on the kid. Brilliant. It's one of the most unbelievable turnarounds you're most likely to see. It'll definitely get comeback of the year. I honestly think it'll get comeback of the year at the awards at the end of the year. Brilliant from Nate Manez.
The shot that he thought, was it an uppercut? He caught him, meant to finish him. It was like a corkscrew uppercut. Corkscrew uppercut to drop Gravely. Well, to be honest with you, I was watching it. I watched it on Sunday. I didn't watch it live. I watched it Sunday. And I looked at my phone. So I've got it on. I looked at my phone. And I'm like, right, okay, this is a finish in the second round. So, you know, I've got things going on. I'm making notes and whatever. So you think, right, second round, I'm going to be focused. But I'm watching the first round. And I see him get hit. And I see him just about recover. And in my brain, I'm like, oh, right, okay, that guy gets knocked out in the second round. I didn't even think of the names and think of the names of the shorts. Just like, Manez has finished here. Oh, I get it. Okay, second round knockout. So Gravely must get the second round knockout, start of the second round. And he comes out, Gravely starts throwing heavy shots, catches him a little bit. And I'm like, right, okay, I'm zoomed in. You've got me full attention now. The knockout's coming. And then suddenly this corkscrew uppercut comes from nowhere. And Manez knocks Gravely out. And I was just like, what the fuck am I watching? Yeah. Oh my goodness, this is insane. And then I'm like, right, okay, so that's why they got a $50,000 bonus, because he was done, kid. That turkey was baked. What a shot. What a finish.
Definitely check it out. If you didn't watch it at the weekend, maybe you've looked down the list of names on this card at the weekend and you thought, I'll watch that one. Definitely go and check that out. Nate Manez, Tony Gravely, only lasts 6 minutes, but it's fucking piss funny. I say piss funny. It's a brilliant comeback. Brilliant comeback.
In fact, if you're going to go back and watch it, you're perfectly set up here, because the main card starts with Joaquin Buckley. And Joaquin Buckley, Nate Manez, and Sarukian, consecutively, those three fights at the start of the main card are the three performance bonus winners. So go and watch those three. And then if you like, fast forward to Anthony Smith. There's your highlights package right there.
Yeah.
You're welcome. But Joaquin Buckley finish was weird, wasn't it? Against Arroyo, the Brazilian kid, because he throws this big looping right hand.
I'll tell you why it was weird, mate. It looked like a fucking Klingon. He had a bloody mouse on his head. Did you see it? On Buckley's head.
That was very strange. Jeez. That was like Joanna and Jacek strange.
Oh, mate, it was horrible.
Buckley throws the finishing sequence. Buckley's under pressure and then explodes forward, throws a right hook. The right hook, actually, the fist lands behind Arroyo's head, but the forearm connects with the back of his ear and obviously scrambles his senses. So it's actually a forearm smash to the head that's set up. And then as he's stumbling back, Arroyo, Buckley pours forward and throws a lovely left uppercut. And it just clips him enough, just clips him enough to turn out the lights. And what we know from Joaquin Buckley is kid's got power, man. And that was all that was all she wrote. That was all he needed.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Good fun.
266 title fights this weekend. We're going to start with the main event.
Isn't it weird, by the way, before you jump in, that we had Bellator 266 last weekend and we've got UFC 266 this weekend? Isn't that weird?
Right. Okay, thanks for that.
I know you like stats. I just thought that was...
It's not a stat. That's just an observation. Here's a stat for you. Bellator did 266 last week. UFC are doing it this week. Thanks for that.
There's one for the water cooler for you in work. Yeah, take that to pub with you and Sathy.
Hey, I was listening to the Fight Disciples this week, and they said that Bellator was 266 last week, and it's UFC 26 this week. Hey, spooky. Don't ever fucking use that at the water cooler. Hey, in fact, who's going to a water cooler? It's not fucking the 80s. What did you learn on Fight Disciples this week? Well, I'll tell you what I learned. Bellator 266 last week. UFC 266 this week, right? And is that it? Is that all they fucking talked about? Jesus.
I'll tell you what I learned. Nick Pete's stuck in the 80s. He's got a water cooler in his house. How strange is that?
Yeah. And when he does the show with his wife, he's very well behaved. main event. We'll go main one first, right? Featherweights. I'm delighted. Yeah. I think I said this on the BT preview show. Volkanovski must be delighted, right? Because he's just been living with Max Holloway in his head for such a long period of time as the featherweight champion, obviously.
Jesus Christ. The dog's in here now and he's absolutely shit himself. It stinks.
What is this show today? This is madness.
Unreal. I'm gonna have to fan the room. This is.
Oh my God.
I know. I'm feeling I'm gonna be sick. Jesus Christ, Blue. My God. Jane's barking over here.
Fucking hell.
Could be the second pizza throw up live on a Fight Disciples show.
There you go. Are you done? Oh. Have you laughed at it?
Yeah. Go on. It's gone.
Jesus.
It's gone.
I was just saying there, just before your dog shat itself, that Volkanovski must be delighted that it's a different opponent that he's facing this weekend, because it's just been Max Holloway as his tenure as the 145-pound champion. And even this must be doing his head in a little bit, because it was originally scheduled for earlier on in the year. He gets COVID, and then they go on the TV. And off the back of that, that's how they become the tough coaches. So they've lived in each other's presence, haven't they, during this training camp, and now we're ending up getting this fight at the weekend. It's mad. Volkanovski's run at 145 pounds, at the top end of 145 pounds, has just been fucking mad. It's not a normal tenure as champion, is it?
No, it's been really strange. And listen, I've got a confession to make here.
You shat yourself. It wasn't the dog.
Yeah. It was me, yeah. I'll have to go to the toilet 1 minute. Listen, I've got to be honest. I ain't going to lie. I was one of the big advocates to bring back Tough. I was like, yeah, man, bring Tough back. Let's do it. Let's get Tough back on our screens. Let's do it, man. Yeah, love a bit of Tough. And he brought back Tough 29 with Ortega and Volkanovski, and I've not watched a single episode.
Filthy.
I've not watched a single full episode. I've seen clips. I've fast-forwarded to a couple of fights.
Yeah.
I just have not been involved in it whatsoever.
Lack of interest?
I just think it's a lack of interest, to be honest with you. And that kind of reflects a little bit in this main event as well. Listen, from a super fan perspective, I can't wait to see Ortega, you know, in this new guise, this new strike happy Ortega, this switch hitting Ortega, take on a pocket rocker like Volkanovski. I get the fight. I'm interested in the fight. Yeah, man. And obviously, Valentina's on this bill as well. You know, I'm a super fan of Valentina. But Nick Diaz is the draw versus Robbie Lawler. That's where we're at with it, you know? And I want to keep coming back to Volkanovski and Ortega. I want to get super excited and I want to get stuck into, you know, the attributes of this fight. But I'm telling you now, when Saturday rolls around, when it's the middle of the morning, I will be bouncing off the walls for Diaz versus Lawler. And then you're going to do well to keep me up for Volkanovski versus Ortega when that adrenaline dump kicks in. I'm telling you now. And that's crazy because Volkanovski is a brilliant champion and Ortega is a more than worthy contender. Now, is
number
it because...
one. Yeah, he's number one.
Is it because I'm a Max Holloway super fan and I believe Max Holloway should have the belt? Maybe. Maybe there's an element of that involved as well. Maybe it's because this fight should have happened in March and it got COVID. Because of Volkanovski got COVID, it got pushed back. And then, of course, because the stars didn't align, maybe the UFC didn't get the coaches they wanted for the comeback show. I don't believe for a second UFC said, let's bring back Tuff for season 29. Right, choice number one, Volkanovski and Ortega as coaches. I don't believe that happened either, to be totally honest with you.
No, because they were talking to Jorge, they were talking to Colby, they were talking to all those characters in order to be the Tuff coaches, weren't they? And then this just kind of fell in their laps off that fight, falling off. So you're right, they weren't first choices. I've seen a lot of the personality bits of this particular show. It's been nice. You know what I mean? It's for example, it ain't Conor McGregor. You know what I mean? Yeah. It ain't Uriah Faber. Vibes. That's just not happened this time around. There's been bits of needle and what have you. But I'm intrigued by the fight, man. I really am, because of the matchups. I think you've got two real contrasting styles coming into this main event. You've got a geezer that's wicked on the deck with his Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and yeah, all right, he's fallen in love with his hands a little bit recently, but it's proven and it's come to fruition in the fight against Zombie. I thought Ortega was brilliant when I thought he was done. When Max beat the shit out of him, I thought, you ain't seeing him again. You don't come back from beatings like that. But he did, and he's put in a wonderful performance against Zombie. And Volkanovski, I mean, me and you have argued back and forth who won the second fight in particular against Max Holloway. Listen, it's more believable that Max Holloway wins the second fight. I think Volk won the first one. It's more believable that Max won the second one. So maybe there is a bit of a cloud over that. I think Volkanovski's a fantastic fighter. He's the type of fighter that I like to watch. Closes distance, gets involved and just gets dirty and throws everything at you. I think as a matchup, I think it's a great fight, man. I really do. I understand the personality thing hasn't caught everybody, but I'm into it. I'm into the fight.
Listen, I'm looking forward to it. Absolutely, I'm looking forward to it. I believe Ortega looked better than ever against Korean Zombie, showed us something different. I think in hindsight, watching that fight again this week, I know we recorded the BT show last week and I tipped Ortega actually on the show. I said, I think Ortega will get a late submission and I don't want to come away from that. But having watched the Korean Zombie fight again at the back end of last week after we did, because Bisping had mentioned something, so I went back and watched it again. And Korean Zombie was very un-Korean Zombie-like in that fight. He tried to fight the fight on the back foot. Now, one thing Alexander Volkanovski will not
do that.
Is fight on the back foot. Because and I'll tell you why. Because he's never done that his entire career. And he tried to do it in the rematch with Max for the first two rounds.
Correct.
And lost two rounds. Yeah. And then what did he do from round three onwards?
Foot
he
down.
Was on the front foot. And I think he's learned the lesson now that I am a front foot fighter. I take it to guys and I break them up and smash them to bits. So I think Ortega's in a whole different world than he was against Korean Zombie. And he's going to find Volkanovski an incredibly tough nut to crack. Can he hold on? Can he throw up a late submission and pinch it out of, you know, from pinch victory from the jaws of defeat? Absolutely he can. Do I believe it'll happen in hindsight? Actually, I don't know. I think Volkanovski is going to be too strong. He's a little bully. That's what he is, man. Look at his days as playing rugby league. I watched a brilliant documentary about him. And he interviewed some of the players that used to play rugby league against. He played semi-pro rugby league. And they were like, he was by far the littlest guy on the pitch, but he was the toughest fella in the league. He used to smash everybody in the league. Was terrified of playing their team because little Volkanovski, 5.5 foot Volkanovski, would literally run through 6'5" fellas. And they went, you couldn't stop him. He was relentless. And he's brought that into the octagon. In fact, he's brought that in against guys in they're all taller than him, but in a similar weight division than him. So you're never going to stop Volkanovski. You're never going to be able to hold him down. And you're never going to be able to hurt him because he's a little monster. Yeah. And I think that's what Ortega's facing this weekend. A monster.
Mm. Listen, I know your wife's present. I said this on the BT show. I just want to obviously let the Fight Disciples know that last Wednesday, I spent a little bit of time in the presence of Valentina Shevchenko. Talked about all different things. We actually went through her Instagram. Yeah, we had a look at some pictures from her Instagram, and she was telling me the stories connected to some of the guns and various things that she does in her extracurricular life. And at the end of it, we had a little chat about dancing. And it just came into my head randomly. It wasn't planned, just came into my head. I said, my colleague would love to learn that that dance that you do at the end, your post-fight victory dance. And she went, oh, absolutely, I will show him next time that I see him. And I said, yeah, it's the guy that interviewed you last time that was asking about your boyfriend and all that type of carry-on. And she went, But yeah, mate, sure. You're on. Yeah, but you're on. There you go, I'll sort it up for you. Bit of Strictly Come Dancing with Valentina Shevchenko next time we're all together.
Amazing, mate. It's like a dream come true. Like a dream come true. Yeah. I tell you what, just to change tack perfectly here, what Lauren Murphy is going to find out at the weekend is that fighting Valentina Shevchenko is anything but a dream come true. Now, I know she's called for the fight. I know she wants the fight. And I even know that Lauren Murphy goes by the moniker Lucky Lauren Murphy. But she is going to need every single ounce of luck that Las Vegas can afford this weekend to defeat Valentina. Because for me, I know the Amanda Nunes fanboys are out there, but for me, technically, Valentina Shevchenko is the best female fighter in the world.
Did somebody just say something to you then? Or is it your dog that's panting in the background?
Well, the dog's just sat on the baby's dolly who's just gone, ba-ba.
Carnage Show. Welcome to all our new listeners this week. This is what you... This is what we knock out on a week-by-week basis. Listen, the journey for Lauren Murphy into mixed martial arts was tremendous, man. She only turned up in a mixed martial arts gym to try and encourage her son to get off his backside and become active and take up self-defense classes. And now look at her. She's fighting for the world title. We fell for her on Love Island. Love Island on Fight Island. Can you imagine falling for her on Love Island? That's a whole different show. We fell for her on Fight Island when she got on the microphone after a great performance and said, listen, she cut a wonderful promo. And we were like going, fucking hell, where's that come from? This is what fight sports is all about. Do it in the octagon, do it on the mic. Lauren Murphy's done that in the last two fights in particular. And she's here through credit. Yeah. Okay, she's the number three ranked in the division. But Valentina smashed the number one and number two. So next up is Lauren Murphy. That's basically where we're at. Does Lauren Murphy beat Valentina Shevchenko? No, I think I go as far as to say that if Lauren Murphy beats Valentina Shevchenko, that's Matt Serra GSP stuff. That's where we're at with it. You know what I mean? It can happen. It might happen, but it ain't going to happen. Valentina's just fucking too good, especially at flyweight. The only time Valentina's getting beat is if she goes up again to 135. And even then, you give her a proper sniff, because if you actually go back and watch the Valentina Shevchenko-Amanda Nunes 2 fight, there's a real argument that Valentina wins the fight, man. 100%. You know what I mean? So
100%.
I can't see any flyweight beating Valentina. And it's disappointing that when you're talking about a championship fight in the UFC and you kind of know who's going to win it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a bit disappointing, but that's just the way it is. That's just how good Shevchenko is. It's no slight on Lauren Murphy. She's a great martial artist. It's just that Shevchenko's fucking off on a different planet.
Yeah, I think you know, UFC deserve a lot of credit. You know, Ronda Rousey kicked the doors in, but since Ronda Rousey kicked the doors in, I think Dana White and the UFC have been forced to realise that the females are a valuable commodity. Not only that, they bring amazing eyeballs to the sport and they cross over to a whole different audience than they had before. And over the last decade, they've proven that women can more than handle being the main event on UFC fight cards, which they still are consistently prominent on. The problem we've got for female MMA these days is two, and I don't class featherweight as a weight division in the UFC anymore. I don't even think it exists anymore.
There's only one girl in there, mate.
But out of the three weight divisions, strawweight, flyweight, and bantamweight, unfortunately, two of those weight divisions are dominated by two of the greatest female mixed martial artists the sport's ever seen, in Amanda Nunes and Valentina Shevchenko. Now, that's unfortunate because it's tough to put them in main events these days, because they've beaten everybody that stands up, and everybody else is so much off them. You know, the only chance UFC gets to really put the girls in the main event is in the strawweight division, where you've got four or five girls, okay, at the moment led by Rose Namajunas, But, you know, Rose is going to go back in with Wiley. Joanna's still knocking about there. You know, it's a real live weight class, so it can still headline. But it's tough to headline with Shevchenko. It's tough to headline with Nunes. And that's a shame for their legacy. Because history will look back when they eventually retire and go, Valentina Shevchenko, Amanda Nunes, you know, two of the greatest that's ever done it. But, you know, how many main events did they actually have? How many pay-per-view main events
did they
drive?
They've got to fight each other, haven't they? They've got to do each other, haven't they?
They've got to. That's the only legacy fight. And, you know, obviously with Amanda Nunes...
They've done it
twice. That's it. They've done it twice and Amanda won twice. Yeah. So it's, you know, high risk, low reward in terms of her. But her legacy needs that fight. I think the two of them have become victims of their own success.
Dominance,
and they're
yeah.
probably... They're probably 10 years ahead every other woman in the world in their weight division, which is a shame for them because historically, when we look back, you know, when we look at the greats of boxing over the last 100 odd plus years, the true greats are defined by their legacies, defined by their dance partners, their eras, you know. Of course it is. That's just the way sport is. Lennox Lewis, Muhammad Ali, whoever you want to look at, you know. And that's...
Even in male mixed martial arts, you know what I mean? Yeah. You talk about the greats now and you look at the like, for example, there were a thing the other day that I was talking to somebody about, what is the greatest five-fight stretch? I think BT actually put this out. What's the greatest five-fight winning run in UFC history? And there's loads of different arguments coming in. For me, the correct answer is John Jones. I think he has nine in there, and you could pick any run of five that you want. From when he became champion, I think he was around about 23, 24 years of age when he started that run as well. But again, defined by the level of opponent that he is beating and able to beat at that stage of his career. Yeah, absolutely. And that goes for everybody. When you talk about Stipe Miocic being the best heavyweight of all time, the reason for that is because he's beaten X, Y, and Z consecutively. You know, when you look at Amanda Nunes, I think you might look at her more favourably because she's flicked between weights. She's gone up and become a multi-weight, you know.
Because the featherweight division's weak, though, isn't it?
But she did take on people like Cyborg, who was classed as the best from elsewhere, you know what I mean? And she smashed Rousey, and she smashed this person and that person, all the champions and all this. So you probably look at Amanda Nunes a little bit more favourably, but like you're right, technically, you look at Shevchenko, and she's on a different planet to everybody else. And at 125 pounds, nobody's beating her. And it's a shame because they're all beating each other. Everybody that she's beating, they're all beating each other. So, like, you look at Andrade. Andrade is on this card, right? And she's taking on Cynthia Cavillo. Now, again, I said on the BT show, you look at Cavillo, there's a lot in this for Cavillo. Go and beat Andrade. Yes. You're probably the next in line to get a title shot at Shevchenko.
100%.
But look at what Shevchenko did to Andrade, who's still the number one ranked girl at this in this weight division. She fucking crucifixed her and beat the shit out of her, mate. you know what I mean? So it's like...
In terms of her own legacy then, would the best result here, and I know obviously if you're Team Shevchenko it's not the case, but would the best result be here losing? Like an Andy Ruiz, Anthony Joshua scenario? What if she got caught cold?
Like a Matt Serra GSP thing? That's kind of what you mean.
Because then she goes away, she rebuilds, they do the rematch, and it's a bigger fight. I would hazard a guess that the rematch is probably a main event because there's a narrative to sell now.
Yeah.
You know, is Valentina done? Can we get, you know, it's strange that, listen, in history, I think a lot of fighters have defined their areas because they've lost and come back and they've shown they've beaten adversity. But it's different when you're in the era of Muhammad Ali with some of the greatest heavyweights of all time and you come back and do that. It's a whole different ball game when you're clearly head and shoulders above everybody else and you just get caught cold.
It's a shame that the judges that night didn't give it to Valentina against Amanda, because you then have a great narrative, don't you? You've got one apiece and at some point it's got to go again. The decider. Yeah. That's the one. And there's an argument that it should have been. It should have been that case.
And do you know what? Maybe that should be Valentina's rhetoric from now on. Then if and when she does beat Lauren Murphy this weekend, maybe she needs to rock the mic, man, and go, "Come on, Amanda, let's do it. I want that third fight with Amanda Nunes. She's beat
everybody.
Everyone.
Knows I beat you.
I'm beating everybody. Yeah, man, start getting that going." But again, she's never lost the flyweight, so we're in a situation where we're forcing her out of her own weight division to define her legacy, which kind of isn't fair, you know.
Hmm.
We didn't do that with Khabib. Nobody said, you've got to go to welterweight, otherwise you can't be the GOAT. No, Khabib's in the GOAT conversation because of this run of results. At a time and moment in time, for me, he's not the GOAT because he didn't move through weight divisions, but he was pound for pound one of the best fighters on the planet. And no one was going, go to welterweight. And yet, with a Valentina Shevchenko, like we were with Mighty Mouse, because they're so dominant in their weight divisions, you're like, well, to prove yourself, you've got to have to win it in another weight division now.
Right, there's the title fight's done. The people's main event.
And it's a five rounder.
17 years after the first, we're getting a rematch between Nick Diaz and Robbie Lawler. I went and watched the first fight the other day. Robbie Lawler's got hair. I had hair. Joe Rogan had hair. That's how long ago this fight is, man. Crazy. 17 years in the making for the rematch. 6 years since Nick Diaz has danced in the UFC octagon. But he's back. And it's hard to sit here and try and preview this fight because I've no idea where he's at as a mixed martial artist. No idea. I know where he's at as a triathlete. I could chat about that if you want. I don't think he's ever going to change his style, though, Nick, is he? He's going to be Nick Diaz. It's just what version of that we are going to see. What has those years done to him? What has the inactivity done to him? It's great matchmaking, by the way, because Lola's 1-4, isn't he? You can't throw Nick Diaz in with a geezer that's on a tear at the moment because he might get eaten alive. It's great matchmaking. It's going to be absolutely fascinating, and the roof is coming off when his face appears and the music starts to play, man, on Saturday night.
And listen, no one's going to complain here because, as you say, they're not throwing him under the bus. They're throwing him in with Robbie Lawler, who himself is at the tail end of his career. This is a legends match, and this is what the UFC is able to do because they do have this roster of the best fighters in the world and guys who still push the needle in terms of being a draw. They allow them, rather than pushing them out the door to Bellator straight away, you can go, you know what, we'll drain the last few pennies out of these guys and allow them to compete on the bigger stage for the final few times by matching them with one another. And I've got no issue with that whatsoever. As you say, the last time they fought, they were 20 and 21 years of age. They're now 38 and 39 years of age.
Fucking madness.
They've been on incredible journeys. You know, Nick Diaz hasn't had his arm raised since 2011. 10 years. In that time, Robbie Lawler came from absolutely nowhere to become UFC champion again, has been in some of the best fights the welterweight division's ever seen. He was the fighter of the year in, I think it was 2014. Whatever year he beats Johnny Hendricks, Rory McDonald, and Carlos Condit consecutively. Rory McDonald, probably the best welterweight fight ever. Carlos Condit, probably one of the best rounds ever. The Hendricks fight was a wonderful fight as well. That was Robbie Lawler, the best fighter on the planet. You know, in 2014, he really had that Indian summer. So they've both been on these incredible journeys. And more than anything, you just want to see them both deliver. And I don't see how it can't deliver. Yes, no. The hands aren't as fast or the feet aren't as fast as they were before. Yes, they're probably a little bit less punch resistant as they were before. But the one thing here, yes, we know Robbie Lawler's a little bit more ragged than he was before because he's at that stage of his career. He's probably been in too many fights. But we just don't know with Nick Diaz because we haven't seen him for so long. It's been 6 years since he fought Anderson Silva in a fight that he lost but got overturned because Anderson popped hot and he popped off for marijuana. It's just...
And then he got banned for God knows how long.
Exactly. It's absolutely insane that we are previewing Nick Diaz versus Robbie Lawler in 2021. But you know what? I cannot wait for it.
People's main event, man. People, what a great weekend of fight sports. We've obviously gone big on AJ Usyk in the world of boxing. People are buzzing for that, and rightfully so, because that is the best against the best.
Yeah.
And here we've got two best against the supposed best. We've kind of said that Valentina's going to win because she's just levels above everybody else. No slight on Lauren Murphy. We do have the top contender taking on the champ in the featherweight division. But we've also got an amazing matchup that has nostalgia. This is what you do, don't you? This is, if you want nostalgic matchups, this is what you do. And it's a proper knock as well. There's going to be claret everywhere, mate. They'll get a standing ovation. It'll be absolutely fucking crazy. I can't believe that they've gone for 25 minutes. I know that Nick could last 25 minutes with his triathlons and all that type of stuff, but fucking hell. You could just imagine when they get to 20 minutes, it's going to be like that. Blood everywhere.
What did the first fight go? Two rounds, was it? Was it a second round
out.
Finish for Diaz?
Yeah, he knocked him out in the second round. Diaz won, yeah. I think it was second round. Might have been earlier. No, second round, yeah, you're right.
Second round, I think it was, yeah. This fight doesn't go past two rounds. Two rounds.
Wow.
I think exactly the same fight is going to play out. Whether it's Nick getting his arm raised or it's Robbie, I don't know. Because
Nick's not getting knocked out, mate. Nick's not getting knocked out.
It's impossible to know.
What the fuck are you going on about? Nick Diaz ain't getting knocked out, man.
Mate, it's impossible to know where Nick Diaz is at because it's been so long.
Can you imagine if
he
wins?
But I guarantee this does not go past two rounds.
Can you imagine if Nick Diaz wins? It'll be madness.
There's only one fight to make.
Masvidal.
There's only one fight to meet, and that's Masvidal for the BMF belt. Get the BMF belt out. We are doing Jorge Masvidal main event. Scrap Usman versus Colby Covington in New York. Get Nick Diaz on with us with Jorge main event BMF belt. I would pay good money to see that.
Speaking of which, what is Leon doing?
No idea.
What is Leon doing, man? How many times have we got to come on this podcast saying Leon? Say this, Leon, say that. The amount of private conversations that we've had with him, people around him, and you just find yourself banging your head against the wall. The lad is supremely talented. Supremely talented. Maybe our best mixed martial artist here in the UK. Maybe.
Correct.
We've got some great talent right now, but he might be the guy.
Yeah.
Why are you not taking the Masvidal fight? Why have you publicly distanced yourself from a fight that has got thirsty narrative? Three piece and a sword, man. It's there. It's written for you. Just turn up and fight the dude. Madness. Madness.
To come out publicly and say, I don't want the fight. I'm going to wait for my world title opportunity. Why should I fight a guy who's lost his last two? Mate, that is it's just ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous that he would even tweet that. Never mind believe it. It's embarrassing. Embarrassing, Leon. You've got to understand what this sport is all about. Jorge Masvidal is a pay-per-view fight. I don't care whether he's lost his last two fights. Both those fights were challenging for the belt. You have got to beat him to cement your shot at the belt. He is going to miss out on that fight, and he's going to miss out on a fight for the world title. I've never felt like Leon is further away from a world title fight than I do now.
He's miles away, mate. He's miles away. I mean, if you compare him to Gilbert Burns, Gilbert Burns has had a title shot. He's had the title shot. He got stopped in the title shot. He rocked Usman, but he was stopped in the title shot. Look how he has been on social media since, man. He has been unbelievable. And don't get me wrong, he put in a wonderful performance against Wonderboy, didn't he? Great performance. And then he's just been relentless. Everybody's been getting it. Masvidal, you can have it. I'll give it to you, Leon. He's calling everybody out. That's what you've got to be like. I guarantee Gilbert Burns will get a title shot quicker, or he'll get a title eliminator fight quicker than Leon Edwards does. Yep. Even though Leon's on the bloody streak of God knows how many fights it is now undefeated.
Yep. And you know what? If the way Leon's going, I would put Vicente Luque in there as well.
I would not be... Well, there you go. This is what will happen. They'll go Burns, Luque. There you go. Eliminator. No,
they're teammates. They're teammates.
Oh, the mates, aren't they? Yeah, the best mates. That would be the thing. Put them two together. Winner gets the shot.
Yeah. I think the fact that their teammate is the only saving grace that Leon's got. But I believe one of those guys is going to end up getting some kind of eliminator. Or if Nick Diaz does it this weekend, they will do Masvidal for the BMF belt and a final eliminator for the welterweight title shot. But I guarantee it.
We're Nick Diaz. Nick Diaz. Nick Diaz Usman. Oh, my days. Oh, my days. What is this? Where are we? What year are we in? Fuck me, man.
I love it. I absolutely love it.
Is there anything else catching your eye on this card at the weekend at 266 rather than off that main card and those three monsters that we've just been speaking about?
Yeah, I think Curtis Blaydes versus Rosenstruck isn't going out the first or second round. There's no way it's going three rounds. I think Rosenstruck's just going to swing.
We've not mentioned Dan Hooker, have we? As if we've not mentioned Dan Hooker. Sorry, man. That's the biggest story of the whole card. Apart from Nick Diaz coming back, the Dan Hooker story's crackers.
Just seeing his Instagram this morning of him like just waving his passport, going, "I've got it, I'm on my way."
He's not setting off yet.
He's got the visa to leave the country.
But the first flight out is Thursday.
Oh my God.
Because there's no flights. Because of everything that's going on in New Zealand, they've not got any commercial flights going to and from the places that he needs to go to anyway. So he has an option, I suppose, of going from New Zealand to Australia and then Australia on to wherever he needs to go to. But he's opting to go from New Zealand direct to Las Vegas on Thursday. So therefore, he's cutting weight on the plane. On the plane, mate. Everybody knows that when you're in the sky, that water retains. You can't get rid of it. It ain't going anywhere.
So actually, yeah, but wait. I did this flight once. I flew from Los Angeles to New Zealand.
He's going the other way.
Myself. Yeah, but you lose a day.
Yeah.
So he'll add a day. So if he leaves on Thursday...
No, it's the other way. I think it's the other way around. I think he leaves on Thursday, New Zealand, and arrives Thursday in Vegas. I think it's that way around.
But it's like a 15-hour flight.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he'll leave Thursday morning... And he'll land like Thursday morning. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So it's not like he's got to travel and overnight and he'll get there on Friday. He won't lose any time, if you know what I mean. He'll take off and land earlier than he took off or something mad like that.
Yeah, that's right. But even so, mate, he's then got one day. He gets there, got one day. Right, cut weight, you're weighing in tomorrow. Crack on.
Yeah, after the 15-hour flight. Mad, isn't he?
He is mad. Especially when he needs a win. He's not on the main card. He's on the prelims. He's taking on Akpraz.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a tough fight.
No joke.
Just fuck it off. That's what I just go, just mate, everything's against me. And then you've got he's got a young family. You've got the quarantine coming back. And mate, I just go, nah, fuck it, lads. I'm right. Just get us a different date, yeah? Can you get us on Fight Island for the next one? Seeing as that's actually in Abu Dhabi, it's a bit closer. Can we do that one?
Is it because the coaches are all coming over with Volkanovski anyway? Has he done his camp with Volk? Has he? Because I know Volkanovski spends some time at City Cop kickboxing as well.
City Cop boxing. That's even better. That's the. I'm a huge fan of City Cop boxing.
I'm not.
Are you one of them City Cock boxers? Amazing. I don't know, mate.
Listen, you're right though. It is so strange. Listen, I would get it if he was even on the main card, but it's like he's in the middle of the prelims.
Yeah.
You know, which is a big step back for Dan Hooker. I had this conversation with someone on social media the other day. I'm like, Dan Hooker here is putting his balls on the line because he's a main event or a co-main event fighter for the last couple of years. But he's putting his cockboxing legacy on the line here by going, right, man, I'll go back to the prelims then against an unranked guy.
Yeah.
Like, that takes some balls because there's a massive fall from grace to be had here if he loses to Mini Kelvin Gastelum. And listen, after the week he's had as well, Gastelum buried his mother. Akpraz, who is the mini Kelvin Gastelum because he looks like him. You know, he tragically had to bury his mother last week after a long illness. And, you know, he's been all over social media there saying that he doesn't want to pull out the fight. And, again, he hasn't pulled out the fight. So maybe there's an element of Dan Hooker going, well, I'm not going to blame a flight schedule when this guy's gone through burying his mother and still going to fight, you know. So it's a weird one, man. There's so many narratives going into this fight on the prelims.
Mm.
And it could change. Akpraz could change his life because he beats Dan Hooker. He's top 10 ranked.
Yeah, man, it's mad. Yeah, just on the New Zealand situation with COVID and lockdown and fighters being granted visas and all this type of stuff. There's loads of noise coming about into that Whittaker and Adesanya will be January. We're also hearing Ngannou and Gan. Will be January. Everybody seems to be targeting January for these monster fights. I'm not convinced, you know, that the New Zealand will be allowed. They'll be allowed to do their thing and train properly and get to where they need to get to, or and what have you for any time soon. Just speaking to Josie Parker, former WBO heavyweight champion at the weekend, they had one case of COVID, mate, and they locked the fucking gaff down.
Yeah.
Lock the whole thing down and nobody's allowed in, nobody's allowed out. I mean, the Dan Hooker situation, they've not looked fondly upon fighters in general. So yeah. He's had to take to social media to get his case heard in front of the embassy in order to be able to get out. That's what's happened. Yeah. There's no flights. There's one flight, I think, a week for him to be able to leave New Zealand to get to where he needs to get to.
Wow.
I know.
It is insane. But don't forget, though, they're about to go. I don't know what the vaccine situation is down in Australasia. But of course, things are opening up here in the West because, you know, the most people have been double vaxxed now, certainly.
It's because Boris don't know it. Boris don't give a fuck, man. Boris needs some coin. Get cracking.
Absolutely. But don't forget, though, we're about to go into winter, so I think we're all bracing ourselves for a bit of a resurgence, whereas New Zealand and Australia are just about to go into summer, and summer certainly does help. I mean, it's 100 degrees outside. More people are outside, less people are mixing inside. So
yeah,
I think
they'll
probably get lockdowns lift down there. But that's not to say the fight couldn't go ahead, but actually, will he be able to bring fighters in to compete against the Australasians needed for the undercard? That's the problem. Because I think the UK could be back in lockdown, never mind the US.
Anyway, let's not get political and depress people. Let's not depress people. We've got some good fights to get excited about. I just went off on a tangent there because of the January stuff and the Dan Hooker situation. Fingers crossed Dan makes it. Fingers crossed he cuts weight safely and he's able to put in a great performance because it's a good fight. Really excited to see Dan Hooker back in. Everybody knows that he's one of my favourite dudes. And Hak Parast having the week that he's had, we wish him all the best as well with this one. Anything else apart from that? Sorry, going off on a tangent that catches your mind.
No, man, all good. All good.
Have you enjoyed doing the podcast with your wife in the room? Has it been all right?
It's been strange. Like, I'll have to make sure I make alternative arrangements next week.
Yeah, it feels like you've not released yourself on the world today.
I'll go and do that now in the shower.
There he is. There's the Nick Peake that you've been waiting for. Yeah? Little wanker joke at the end of the show just to keep you ticking over. Just to let you know that he's still in the room, he's still there, he's got a cheeky glint in his eye. Anyway, thank you very much for listening to us. Hopefully you've enjoyed the show. You can subscribe to us on iTunes and via Android. You can go to our website fightdisciples.com. go to YouTube as well, because the best bits of this show, which I will post because I've got the video here of his wife being in the show, so I will make sure that goes on YouTube later on. You can go and have a look. She's in her pyjamas. If you want to have a look at that, that's even better. Anyway, thanks for listening. Enjoy the fights this weekend and we'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, subscribe via iTunes.